trail mix.
Critical Camps.
From Kessel Barton.
On the Lizard.
In Cornwall.
The summer of 2016.
Welcome to part two of Trail Mixed, a series of shows emerging from Paul Cheyney's Critical Camps, six events that took place over the summer of 2016. In this second programme, we start from our position as atomized and increasingly isolated beings, making contact only through technology and media. One effect of imagining a post-apocalyptic world is to make us realise how unpracticed we are
at direct cooperation,
unassisted by complex social, legal and technological systems.
What tools and methods can be used to revitalise cooperative thinking?
This trail mix asks whether the growth of individualism is correlated with political disempowerment
and sets up a laboratory
for investigating potentials for and obstacles to cooperation. We will hear from speakers Fernanda Eugenio, an anthropologist and founder director of AND Lab Research, from Lisbon in Portugal, and from Magda Tyslik-Carver, an independent researcher and curator investigating relational arrangements of humans and non-humans and their biopolitical creations through curating in or as the commons, future thinking, effective data, and data fictions. We're going into the Exit Pavilion on the Lizard Peninsula.
Okay, I just propose that we split into groups, like four people in each square, and then to have a bit of this experience, would be we start by this face that it's not really empty, but we can treat as if it's empty.
A new beginning.
Yeah, it's a new beginning by bringing something completely new, or imagine that someone just used what is already there, like, I don't know, this small problem here and so on, and bring already a relation with this, then this become something that is important. If no one used this, like bringing something new.
Now, we're in a bender here, a construction of sycamore, hazel, bent archways, and found glass wooden frames, a stage made out of pallets, stood on tree stumps, the whole thing covered in canvas from old sails. In the middle of the room there are two small white tables that have been prepped by Fernanda. They are blank. The stage is full of stuff. What's going on is a workshop called Modus Operandi Am.
Yeah, I have the experience of these two steps of the game. First one is this that is mainly based on we are going to have at least three positions to arrive in a common plane. Of course, maybe more, no? But will be first position that someone will offer an accident. This will be the first position. Then one of people around will propose a relation to this accident, second position. Then we will relate with this relation, making a third position.
The stage is piled high with objects, chalk, pens, paper, paperclips, pins, tape, paper, tissue, card, paint, objects, metal, small, tiny fragments, collections of objects. The foundation of this idea lies in translation. And Marc Auger, an anthropologist, once said the best way to understand a word is to translate it. And the word is repair, or in Portuguese, where Fernanda is from, parar. Parar is to stop. Reparar is to stop again. But within reparar is also the definition to notice and and to repair. The aim of the game is to place an object upon the table to create a proposition. Another audience member in silence responds to that proposition with another object or by moving the object. This slow, simple game becomes a fascinating conversation played out in silence, a prelingual form based upon the problem of translation between individuals, a way of communicating in a group. Without social structure, language, laws, or technology. Just a table and some stuff. The stuff can be anything. An elastic band and a pencil. The contents of a pencil case. The contents of the room played with on a stage.
So, and we can
so
use
are we,
these materials?
Are we beginning in silence?
Yes.
Yes. And also, the other thing is that there's no order.
It's like yes, there's
no order.
Anyone
can move at any point
exactly.
to make a change.
The only thing that is that, let's say that I have just done a movement, I will not do the second one. I will not do two, three movements in a row, because then I will just playing alone. But it's possible that I do a movement, then she do a movement, then I do a movement again. This is completely okay. And then you didn't. It's okay. And we are still together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's this.
Okay,
but
so
of course, if I can just be around if anyone wants to, yeah, talk in the middle, it's possible. But we are going to play mainly in silence.
Es el momento. What we want is the moment. We don't want the past. We want the moment. Just como el viento, just like the wind. Como el pan, just like bread, just like bread. It's gotta be fresh. Even a day old is getting to be too much. Lo que queremos debe de ser del día. Cada hora se enfría. El pasado mejor no encarcelarnos. Right, the past, it's better if it don't imprison us. Lo que queremos es lo de hoy. Si no lo tengo, mejor no lo doy. El pasado lo dejamos pasar. Cantante a cantar. Es como el pan, como el pan, como el pan de los egipcios. Oh, debe de ser del día, cada hora se enfría. Cantante a cantar, oh, 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 oh. La ta 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 ta. Y si las palabras quieren venir, que vengan. No vienen, a nosotros da igual. Las palabras mejor no encadenarnos. That's right, it's better if words don't imprison us either. Lo que queremos es el momento. Tal como el viento, tal como el viento. El pasado lo dejamos pasar. Cantante a cantar Es como el pan. Como el pan, tal como el pan de los egipcios, oh, 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 debe de ser tal como él quiere, cantante a cantar, oh, oh.
certainly longer than you'd expect. Both of the groups seem to come to some sort of conclusion about where their conversation has got them to. They all feel like they know each other more than they did at the beginning. It is almost like a strange personality test, checking how considerate you are. Each act of destruction, an act of creation, each act of creation, an act of destruction. As the tables are reconfigured and society moves on.
I think so.
Kind of coming to the end of this period, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's been through several phases.
Yeah, till now.
There could have been moments earlier when we could have stopped at several points. Yeah. But it continues and it transforms into something else. So, yeah.
Be good to hear a bit from you about the experience. How do you feel the different moments and oscillations of the experience now?
I was really surprised how people have made something and then it was trashed so many times. Like there was no honouring of what had come before. It was like, let's move on. But in the end, as we seem to have an end, most of the materials that were trashed are still on the table. And have been honoured. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Yeah, it sort of feels like at some point you hit peak stuff. Yeah. You've got enough things and you just rework them. But there's sort of quite a while it is, we'll introduce something new. And then you hit a point where you go, actually.
Does seem to veer from quite contemporary interior design. through to at times quite a considered narrative.
It's interesting to me how satisfying it was to see that other people like all joined in doing the same thing and then raising the stake, and then you're like, oh, what about this? And someone else brings something new, but it's not completely unrelated. And also how OCD I felt about things straight or bundled.
Working in silence was really special.
Yeah.
As groups, we just don't even go there. We feel we have to say something. So it was really quite special just to enjoy that different communication. Very special.
Thank you.
The act of participating in modus operandi and is to watch the history of civilizations rise up and collapse before you on a table. To, without noticing, make every mistake every human civilization has ever made, over and over again. Each new civilization rising up out of the fragmentary parts of the previous version. Salvage. Something is always left behind. There is never a clean break. That each phase of the game rises up to a maximum plane, peaks and collapses, and then each new phase rises up, peaks, collapses.
Interesting to figure out whether that's a universal human trait. You played that with different types of people, they play it a different way.
I'm sure it would be really different every time, depending on the person. Although, I think, you know, in that setting where eight people don't know each other necessarily, and you're split into two groups of four, which automatically suggests a sense of team or teamwork or something.
Yeah.
And so I think right from the start, our group in our exercise and build was immediately respectful of each other. And I don't know, there was almost an implied sense of teamwork. I think it was implicit right from the start. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
And we... I think we trusted each other as well, you know. I think quite quickly we were impressed with each other's initial actions, which sort of, I don't know, and trust, you know, if you were building societies, particularly from scratch, which is Paul's thesis, that trust, individual trust, group trust is really important.
Yeah, but also necessary.
There's this very common thing about humans create chaos and then they create order and then they get bored with order, so they create chaos. And that, to me, came across in what we did. Humans create chaos and then they create order. Humans create chaos and then they create order. Humans create chaos and then they create order. Humans create chaos and then they create order.
Oh, it's just another day. It's just another day on earth. Oh, it's just another day. Just another day. It's just another day on earth. Oh, it's just another day on earth. It's just another day on earth. One day. Thank you.
This is a, I think this is a society I'd like to live in. This is a society I'd like to live in.
For a bit. I think it was important to have that moment of experimenting with it when we were all reaching for materials and trying them out. And for me, that was a way to kind of get a feel of what we are actually doing and recognizing what others are doing and how we can connect it together, all those, you know, little moments of experimenting. Mm. And then later on, we started to pay attention to each other as well. And I thought that was really nice because it was visible. It was, maybe not visible, it was felt, you know, that we started to do that. Mm. And also when we were going through all those different phases of destroying and coming back, there was this desire to still mess it about and try again. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really nice. All those different layers and stages.
Yeah. There never is this white space.
Yeah.
There's always something left from the civilization before, or from the memory, or from the phenotype. Or so.
For the health of the psyche and the culture, for the individual and the whole society, oblivion is as necessary as memory. One must know how to forget, Marc Auger suggests, not just to live fully in the present, but also to comprehend the past. Renowned as an anthropologist and an innovative social thinker, Auger's meditation moves from how forgetting the present or recent past enables us to return to earlier pasts, to how forgetting propels us into the present, and finally, to how forgetting becomes a necessary part of survival. Oblivion moves with authority and ease amongst a wide variety of sources. To illustrate the interplay of memory and forgetting in the stories of life and death told across many cultures and many times, memory and oblivion, he concedes, cannot be separated. Memories are crafted by oblivion, as the outlines of the shoreline are created by the sea, as the future is created by the past.
I'll check with Dom on the ETA on the dinner, and we can make a quick decision.
Karen, you need to sort out
Magda got locked in the room.
I got locked in the room.
Yeah, everyone did.
Now, it didn't happen until someone had put this little bit of string at the top.
Yeah.
Someone is an addition to it,
yeah.
Yeah,
but there was nothing to shut the door.
No. See, when the door didn't shut, then no one would get locked in.
No,
now it can shut
no,
the inside.
No, but the wood comes down even if you don't put the loop on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I had to put my head through the gap. And then I had to reach down and use my phone to extend
did
my
you?
Reach.
Well, I was trying to reach and I couldn't use
the
my head.
1001 years of an iPad.
You just got to help you.
Thank God. I was taking a knife to the toilet with me.
But you don't want to. Okay, so the short-term solution is to go to the toilet and try it, right?
Yeah.
I have an axe with me.
You shouldn't divulge that information before you're going to die.
Okay, so for this last little section, before we eat and then before we have the music, we are going to be hearing from Magda, Magda Tishlikhava, who's just very recently completed her PhD, so now she's a doctor, as of like 1.5 weeks.
So
Magda has her PhD was on curating in the commons,
mm-hmm.
right? So it was based here.
No.
Oh, right. No. Sorry, it wasn't. It was in Denmark.
That's right. Aarhus University.
Aarhus
yeah.
University.
Yeah.
And now she's working with Fabrica down in Brighton. She's going to talk a little bit about examples of collaboration within the art world. Is that correct? To begin with.
Examples of collaboration, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, over to you.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Pleasure.
It's great to be here, and I'll be sharing, my talk is called Sheep, Commons and Sharing Economy, and I'll be sharing a little bit of research that I've done for my PhD. One is about sheep, one is about commons, and one is about share economy. I am a researcher and curator, and I mainly work with, or I have been working with digital technologies and with software and algorithm, and I use those in my practice. And I have been interested for a long time, and that's what my PhD was about, how those technologies influence curatorial practices, but also creative practices, and more general, I suppose, popular culture. So, but also in relation to that, I investigated commons as a kind of, for me, there was some kind of connection between popular culture online and also commons, and I wanted to see what that might be. And when I talk about commons, I do actually mean here, sort of I reference the historical commons and you know the Magna Carta and practices related to making and reproducing commons. Something which is very kind of popular at the moment and seems to go through a renaissance.
Oh, yeah.
With those kind of ideas and historical ideas and also economical ideas about commons, because I suppose it's a trend that internet is a kind of technology of connection, of communication, of networking. So there is already kind of collaboration part of that environment. I suppose it's already kind of ingrained in it. So when we talk about information society and network society, which is really interesting to kind of talk about that in this space, you know, because we are not connected here in the way that we usually are with our phones and tablets and computers. So when we talk about information society, as we are, there is collaboration and connection already part of it somehow. So I was quite intrigued also by what you put in the general write-up for this meeting today, which was something like we are atomized and isolated beings and practice in unassisted collaboration. And I think I'd like to kind of start with that. You know, what does it mean that we are atomized and isolated and practiced in unassisted collaboration? Because if we're thinking of the fact that we are constantly connected and we're actually constantly collaborating and being developing relations with each other, then perhaps, you know, what happens in that space of internet that we experience it as maybe loneliness or as a lack of connection or as a sort of there might be some perceived difficulty in kind of feeling connected or feeling social. So this is, I guess, what I'd like to frame this little talk around. Perhaps not answering those questions, but maybe just because we won't have time for that, but maybe just looking at through a number of examples at that kind of how does it feel to be connected and at the same time to feel not connected as well. So how, and also another thing, how we experience collaboration, which is something that we've just done, which was fantastic, and also where does it happen? But I'm also thinking, making those connections to those spaces that are familiar to us, maybe, but not necessarily here at the moment, although I have a computer. So I will start. I said I'll start with the sheep. I'd like to talk about the sheep market. It is a project which was done in 2006 by artist Aaron Coplin, and it was a project that used. I don't know if you're familiar with the Amazon Mechanical Turk platform. Have you heard of that? So it's a platform that was introduced. Have you heard about Mechanical Turk?
No.
So Mechanical Turk was this thing which Daria, my daughter, will show you. some visual material. So this is an automaton. So from 18th century, which was a machine that played chess, and it was you know the first machine which would travel across the city, so maybe even Europe. And it would play with people, and I don't know how often it would win or not, but the idea was that there was this non-human who was able to play chess. But of course there was a trick. The trick was that there was actually actually, there's another thing. You can move, there's three more images. A couple of them are quite small. So the machine wasn't that clever, nor it wasn't sort of working by itself. It was moved by a human who was hiding underneath the table. That's quite an interesting example of maybe sort of the ideas that we have about kind of a machine's, you know, human-computer interaction, or what is the relation between the human? You know, there's always human behind it. So Amazon Mechanical Turk is a platform introduced by Amazon in 2005, I think, which kind of uses this model, I suppose, it's a crowdsourcing marketplace which connects employers with laborers. So, for example, if you have a task that you want to that is difficult to be undertaken by computers, and it requires a human intelligence, source that through this Amazon Mechanical Turk platform. And it's actually so things that have been outsourced are, for example, photographs that require sorting or categorizing. For example, a photograph wonderful place, which is or positive place or something like that, where you have to go sort through loads of photographs, and you are able to kind of categorize photographs. You know, weddings go into different category, and funerals go into different category, and maybe sometimes they are not that easy to categorize through algorithm, for example. So humans are used to do that, and so Aaron Cobham used this platform, and he was interested in kind of looking at the ideas around creativity, so how creativity works in this sort of bureaucratized and highly information and systematic kind of way that technology provides. So he outsourced, he asked human workers to produce 10,000 sheep that have to face left. So he asked them to draw 10,000 sheep facing left, and he collected all those 10,000 sheep, and then there was another. So this is the 10,000 sheep that were produced in the. So maybe pass it around, and there are a few more images after that you can look as well. So he recorded all those sheep. He collected all the sheep, and also he recorded the way he asked people to record the actual process of drawing the sheep. And then he presented it at the galleries, and they are presented in as you can see, there's I think four images after the first one, as a huge printout of all the 10,000 sheep, as a you can on this artwork exists online. You can click on each sheep, and then you can see how that sheep was drawn and so on, and. In that system, what he's done, he obviously appropriated a particular labor system into his own artwork, where he paid everyone. I think he paid sort of around. It's always less than a dollar. He paid I think 2 cents for each sheep. But as part of the presentation of this artwork, he also printed out a number of posters with sheep, and sold them $10 a poster. So he's, you know, as well as appropriating certain labor kind of systems, he also kind of engages with this value system that is present in art. And
Aaron Coblin is an artist, designer, coder, and entrepreneur specializing in data and digital technologies. Here he is talking about an earlier project called Bicycle, built for 2000.
Daisy, give me your answer.
In 1962, the world heard a computer sing for the first time when an IBM 704 was programmed at Bell Labs to sing the song Daisy Bell. Now, in 2009, the song has been recreated from more than 2,000 sound clips collected online to form Bicycle Built for 2000. To create the song, a MIDI score of Daisy Bell is used to synthesize 297 individual sound clips, consisting of vocals and keyboard notes. These sound clips were fed into Amazon's Mechanical Turk web service, where workers listened to and recorded their renditions of these short sounds without knowledge of the overall task.
Hello, hello?
The sounds were then harvested and recombined to form a version of Daisy Bell sung through a distributed system of more than 2,000 human voices. Despite the abnormalities, the final song clearly resembles its original form, as outliers are averaged into the overall chorus.
If you Google the Sheep Market and Aaron Coblin, you will be able to find that artwork online. What is interesting to me in this project is the way in which this particular artwork is experienced in the gallery. As a curator, I'm sort of interesting how this kind of artwork can be experienced in the gallery. And of course here we have there is no way in which the artist introduces this kind of Amazon Mechanical Turk in the gallery system. So there is no way in which the audience can actually recognize what kind of system produced that artwork. And as you can see, I think the last image in the series of those particular images is loads of people, loads of heads with this printout on the wall. So engaging kind of with the image of the sheep that is out there. There are those spaces like, for example, online spaces or internet, which are completely based on collaboration between humans and non-humans and our labor and our algorithmic labor. And I think where actually it is quite difficult to opt out from participation or to opt out from certain ideas about how we perform in public or how we are in private. So I think that will be all that I have to say today. Thank you very much. The way in which resources are considered, they are not considered resources, right? They are considered as, you know, plants and animals are also part, and humans are part of the same commons, you know? So I think that's where we probably need to move with sort of radical thinking about commons rather than and once we start to think about something as a resource, for example, then of course we completely disregard the rights of the thing that we call resource to the same thing that we feel we have right to.
But the figure of commons is also one that's used in expropriation, isn't it? When you say, oh, we're going to create this wilderness reserve here which is for everybody, but that usually involves curtailing the rights of the people who are actually living there.
It's not enough to just stop at the word. You have to ask who is this common to you.
Yeah.
On the song we chose is to try to entice people to dance. Some others are a bit more mournful, so maybe we could keep them for when we go around the campfire.
Well, we need a mournful one to let the dinner go down.
What are you making?
Fish and chips. Oh, okay, proper. Thank you.
shady grove to stay at home, feeling what I've done. Shady grove, my little love, shady grove, I say. Shady grove, my little love, I'm gonna go away.
Et dans les grands dangers,
time, obviously, it's in French. Did you understand anything?
Don't marry an ugly woman. Absolutely. Don't marry a pretty woman. Don't marry a poor woman.
Is that what it's about?
We've
been
saying
this all this time.
If you marry a poor woman, you have to
apologise for my French.
If you marry a poor woman, you have to work all your life. If you marry a woman who's got a lot of money, then people are going to think that you married her for money. If you marry a pretty woman, people are going to think that you married her for people are going to steal her from you. And if you
You've been listening to Quiddle Camp, a trail mix special produced by Bram Thomas Hahn, commissioned by Castlebar Rural Centre for Contemporary Art on the Lisbon Cornwall.